People always want to know what it's like to be me. How does it feel to see a dead body? Tell a family their loved one has been murdered. Talk to a rape victim, catch a killer, and get them to confess. Hold on tight, my friends. Get ready for the journey, and welcome to Murder with Menina.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Murder with Menina. We are part three of Marina Bolter case. What do you think, Colleen?
Well, you know, it was so interesting to me because when we had met with Tressie, we had Tressie's story, and then I had listened to an interview Tressie gave on another podcast called Unfound.
Now, just to clarify, Tressie is Marina's mother.
Marina's mother, yes. Faith's mother, too.
Yes.
And then, and I was all in. I believed Tressie.
Sure.
And I believed what she had said on the podcast. She seemed really convincing to me.
Right.
And then Faith, some of the things that Faith and Ashley said contradicted some of the things Tressie said and certainly contradicted Tressie's character,
right,
the way Tressie portrayed herself.
Right.
And then when you and I talked, you said, well, say what you said.
Yeah.
You said, I'm not surprised at all. I knew that was a performance.
Well, so okay, you have to understand, like, when we went and interviewed Tressie, again, it was for a possible television show, and so we got a taste of her, but then we went back. We really got into her life. We're in her home.
Right.
And
boy, did we.
She's just off the wall. Like, I liked her, but it's one of those things where she talks and talks and talks, and about maybe every third or fourth thing is probably the truth, mixed in with some, you know, lies and mixed in with some things that she wants you to know, wants you to hear, and wants you to believe. Because think of her position. We were there to help her. We were there to try to get the case moving. So she was very, very excited. And you have to take that into consideration, what we're trying to do and then what she's trying to do. So, of course, she's putting on this performance because she doesn't want to look bad. There's no doubt that she loved her. And when you start to meet people and you start to learn their stories, like I've said a million times, people are doing the best that they can do at the time, right? And so looking at her circumstances and knowing all of her children had been taken away from her and then spending 3 hours with her, I mean, she was all over the place. We were cracking up at some point. We were really touched by her emotions sometime. We were scared a couple times. Like, we were having all of these emotions while we were in the house speaking with her. And so you have to take a lot of that with a grain of salt. And then fast forward a few years later, and we're talking to Faith, and we're getting her perspective. And Faith's perspective is completely different. This is her mother. You know, Tressie was just somebody that we met and we spent a few hours with.
That's right.
And so everyone kind of gives their story. And as time goes on and things are revealed, things change. And then, of course, you know, lying is a little bit, it's hard to do, right? Because you have to remember what the lies are. And she was trying to present herself in a certain light, which I think was halfway true sometimes, but wanting our help. So she's not going to say some of the things that maybe Faith was saying. You know, Faith, to me, kept it really, really real. I think she loves her mother. She also knew that there was a lot of things that were messed up. And so, you know, that's where we're at. So it's just dynamic when you start to talk about all of the people. And then, of course, the things we learned about DJ, right? She loved DJ. Tressie loved DJ. Faith is like, he abused the hell out of her and, you know, bruised her collarbone and was very, you know, stalky-like and very jealous and loses his shit quickly. So it's just like whoever you talk to, their perception of that person is going to be different. So every perception is different, right? Based on the type of relationship.
Well, what's so interesting about this is you always said to me, the more people you interview, it weaves a tapestry and then you begin to see the whole picture.
Absolutely.
And that's what I could see happening already. And then even talking to Faith, I was writing a whole list, and Ashley, I was writing a whole list of, wow, these are all the other people we would need to talk to fill in that tapestry.
Right.
Like, you know, is DJ a real suspect? Well, let's, you know, he's dead now, but let's see what is the girlfriend of his other child?
Right.
You know, so the mother of his other child, what was her experience with him? Was he physically abusive with her? Probably, right? What was his family like?
Right.
What is his family like? What does that whole picture look like? What were his friends like? Then to talk to the two surviving friends.
Right. So when you kind of look
at it, there's just so many places to go to fill in.
Right. And that's what you have to do with cold cases, right? They're cold for a reason. So you've got to fill in all of the blanks that were never even approached, never even asked, were never answered. You've got all these holes, then that's why it's cold. So for me as a detective, the first thing I would do would be to go down there and drive. I would go down to the supermarket, the IGA, and then I would drive to the abandoned pizza place. And I would see how long that was. That would be the first thing I would do. I would get a sense of the area. And then based on the area, I would try to get dogs out there to start looking for human remains.
Because even after 10 years, would the dogs pick up the scent?
Absolutely. There's dogs that can pick up.
Fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. And so that's, I would start there and look at the area and see, okay, well, where could somebody, hide a dead body, or, you know, where did, because my gut right now tells me, I think it happened really close around there. Now, maybe not, but I would start there because you have to have a starting point. And after that, then I would go back and I would talk to, first I would try to find out, and I don't know the answer to this, and I can ask Faith, but who was Marina's best friend, right? Because I've talked about that a million times. You get so much information from your very, very best friend. And then talk to him or her. But then I would go back to the IGA in the store and start talking to her boss, because Faith now gave us a perspective of, you know, she was really trying to change her life, and her boss was, you know, kind of proud of her and kind of saw this transformation, and get her perspective of where she was. And then also kind of dive into that unknown guy that picked her up. Who is this guy? Who do you think this guy is? Did he meet her at the store, at the deli where she worked? You know, just get as much information.
And the boss, April, does she have any recollection of a particular man that fits that description talking or even staring at Marina?
Right. And so it's so important to go back and get the people and the players that were involved and ask the questions that one may never have been asked, because I don't know that her boss was ever interviewed. I bet you she wasn't, you know, just to get her questions were never asked to her probably by detectives. So it's like, what's the perspective? What do you think? Because you're one of the last people too, if you were working that day, that saw her, you know, and everyone else that was working that day, you know,
right.
Did you see her when she walked out the door? So you just have to start asking all of the questions that one probably were never asked. And that's a lot of work tracking people down.
And by the way, the other two friends that were with DJ saw her get into the car with the man. They may have memories of what the man looked
exactly.
like.
Exactly. So that's the next
feelings associated.
Absolutely. And so that's the next step. So you've gone to the location of the supermarket. You've gone to the location where she was last possibly seen, or where her cell phone, you've interviewed the boss, and then you've got to track down DJ's people. There's two people that were with DJ that day, or three people with DJ that day. One of them's dead, but there's still two people left. Interview them, get their perspective, and then maybe find their girlfriend, right? Because when you're dealing with people, like, you know, when you're dealing with people at all, if they don't give you the information, then you got to go to the next best chance. And that would be their girlfriends, you know, or their best friends, and interview them. I mean, the list can go on and on, but you've got to nail down those two people. And from what Faith, there's one that has maybe some empathy and a heart, you know, and tackle him first and just get their perspective. So interview after interview. And so when you're doing these cold cases, now we've already talked to two more people. And then, of course, that just opens up more and more doors to go, well, this person might know something. So that's kind of how you work the cold case angle.
Well, what's so interesting is then you do it like that's filling in DJs. Filling in the dots on, or the, you know, the spaces for DJ, coloring that in, then shift gears to Toby. Not like he's the highest integrity guy.
Right. I mean, you have
he and his wife were helping Marina, and he's sleeping with Marina, and his wife didn't know it. I mean, that gives you a clue of his integrity. He was rumored to have other affairs besides Marina at the same time. And what's his history like?
Well, and the great thing about people with low character that I found out in investigating, and when they do these to women and have multiple people, you've got a lot of pissed off ex-girlfriends, you've got pissed off baby mamas, and they love to talk. They love, and if they,
right,
you know,
the best witnesses,
they're the best witnesses, right? They're emotional about it. They're pissed off. You know, I found so many suspects because I figure out, okay, who's the baby mom? Who's the pissed off baby mama? Who's the last girlfriend that's pissed? Because they'll give it up. They just will.
Well, you would think the wife seems like she may have, you know, be a person of integrity. I mean, who knows why she was with somebody like him, but, you know, we all make mistakes. And it'd be interesting to talk to her. She was a nurse.
She would really be interesting. I would love. So from the boss to DJ. Now we're looking at Toby. Obviously, you want to interview the wife, find out who Toby's best friend is. Who are the people that he hangs out with? Who's willing to talk to us about getting more character references? Because it is, again, character references, right? Like we're kind of learning.
Right.
We learned about Tressy in our perspective, and then Faith gives us a little bit more character reference of what Tressy's about. So with Toby, yeah, absolutely. Talk to the current wife, who I think is the ex-wife now.
She's the ex-wife now, according to Faith and Ashley.
Yeah, so she would be prime, like what I like to call prime real estate, a prime conversation with her, and just say, look, you know, I'm investigating this. Help me. Because I'm telling you, all of these people have a piece of the puzzle. They obviously do. And we've got so many people that are possible suspects at this point.
I mean, and what a scumbag that he wanted Marina to come to the party that he and his wife were throwing on New Year's Eve.
Right.
And, you know, and it's interesting also because Faith and Ashley thought that DJ was their prime suspect. Mm-hmm. Tressy's prime suspect is Toby.
Right.
Both could have had motivations. Both could have had the character to do something like that. We don't know, but it seems
well. All
that
of the
way.
People that are a person of interest or suspects. You got your suspects, which are a lot more, you think, and then you've got your person of interest. But all of them have shady shit, like all of them do. And you know, and what's so crazy about this case is like a few of them have motive. Like there's motive, right? Toby's got motive. DJ's got motive. Okay, so
And if it's true that the driver was convicted of abduction and rape, and we do know he had a checkered past, but they haven't opened up the records, but I did read it was conviction. He was convicted of abduction and rape. That's motive.
Right.
Because somebody who abducts and rapes somebody doesn't do it once.
Right.
That's not a one-off kind of crime.
Well, this is what makes this case kind of so interesting and dynamic because, you know, we, as investigators, we have to check off certain boxes. Is there motive? Well, holy shit, there's motive in everybody. Okay. Right. Is there accessibility? Yeah. Everyone's pretty accessible to Marina. You know, where are they at? Were they close to her when she went missing? Yeah. DJ was, Toby was, we're all in this general area. So all of these people are checking off the boxes. You know, if there weren't other people right. involved, you know, we would hunker in on DJ, right? He's the boyfriend. He's jealous. He's beaten her before. But shit, you start looking at Marina's life and you've got so many people and it's not like you can discard any of them really because they all check off different boxes. So, you know, with Toby, you know, and of course, you know, we've got all these people that we've interviewed and they're going to lead us to two or three more people. That's what's so dynamic and great about an investigator. The more that you talk to people, especially with cold cases, I can't stress it enough, you can warm these things up by a conversation. One conversation can lead you down three or four roads. And then you go and have another conversation. And then before you know it, you have 20 different people now that you've got to talk to. Just sitting here having this discussion with you, we've got five or six people right off the bat that would be great to have conversations with. And don't think for a second that Toby's wife isn't going to give us a couple people. I mean, everyone's going to give us a couple more. And so that's how you fill in the blank with that. And then, of course, and you know more about this guy than I do at this point, is Vernon. Tell us about Vernon.
So Vernon was the neighbor what lived in the apartment building with Marina. So there were only, I guess there were four units in the apartment building. Only two of them were occupied. One was Marina and one was Vernon. Marina did not know that Vernon, a convicted killer, was living in her building.
Right.
Was not informed by the apartment manager.
Right.
The landlord said, well, he served his time, like it wouldn't be fair. Are you kidding me? It was public record. He was known as the Aurora College Killer.
Right.
He pled guilty in 1976 to the offense of murder and was sentenced to a term of 30 to 90 years imprisonment.
Okay.
And what he did to this woman was horrific. After he killed this young mother, he took her eyes out. I mean, it was as grisly and as awful as you can imagine, like extremely violent. So after serving 5 years, he said, I don't really get along with females. If you let me out, it's probably going to happen again.
Okay,
he served another 31 years after that.
Right.
He had been out 2 years before Marina disappeared.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing. That was in 1982 that he gave that interview and said, I would probably kill again. But before that, 2 years after he was convicted in 1978, he actually appealed. He appealed, contending that his plea was involuntary because he was not advised of the mandatory parole term.
Right.
And he also, he tried to seek the reversal of other orders. It's, you know, more complicated. But he actually tried to get out of jail
right.
2 years after he was put in. And then 3 years after that says, if you let me out, I'll kill again.
Right.
And then 31 years after that is released and there's a public outcry, and then had been out for 2 years. But we had sort of talked about, like, how do you know that his alibi of being at work is airtight? How can you be sure of that?
Well, I think with something like that, I don't know that you would ever be for sure. And I think just based on his history and based on this, how he had access to Marina living in the same building, I don't know that it could ever get airtight enough for me.
And Marina was the same age as his victim,
right. And so
as
when
his
you,
first victim.
You take,
and was a young mother, was fit the profile exactly.
Right. So I don't know. I think the information they said, what, he was at work?
He had an alibi that he was at work. So
okay.
The two things that don't make sense to me are that, how airtight could that alibi be? What if he had timed, he had been studying like predators do,
sure.
Her habits, or overheard something or knew something? He and Toby are friends on Facebook or were. So maybe he heard that small town, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Toby's having a party, Marina's going,
right.
Like sees the whole setup, right? I mean, Couldn't he have said, oh, I have to go to the bathroom at work, come, snatched, you know, I don't know, any number of scenarios.
Exactly. So the only way that it would probably fit airtight with me as an investigator would be I'd have to see video, in timed video, current video of him at his workplace, period. So if I didn't have that, then he would still be really, really high. But it's like anything else, you know. Detectives and their work product and how they look at a case. You know, if you step back and we're Monday morning quarterbacking it, of course, but when you step back, I mean, he moves number one to the list along with DJ, right? And so, but how hard did the detectives work to check it? Was it like, hey, they went and talked to his boss and his boss said, yeah, he was here. And then they left it at that, right? It's one of those.
That's what I'm wondering. And why are they not opening any of the case details to anybody? I mean, that
there's
is
a couple
so
reasons
to me.
For that, to me, as an investigator, when I don't divulge a lot of information, it's because I have good information and I don't want to, I have a suspect and I'm still working the case pretty hard and I don't want to give that out yet. I don't think that that's happening here.
Right.
I don't
that
think
makes
that,
sense, unfortunately.
Yeah,
not,
I don't think
no,
it, that
not
it is.
In this case,
and
probably.
So the thing about it is you never really know. Unless I could sit down and talk to the investigator and say, hey, tell me why his alibi, you're not looking at him any further. I know he has an alibi. Tell me how you checked it. Who did you talk to? What proof other than somebody saying, yes, he was at work, do you have?
And you know what? And then remember, Faith said there were some problems. There were some people he had some conflicts at work. Like, hello, let's go talk
yeah.
to those people. His coworkers, what were their impressions of him?
Right.
And,
yeah,
that kind of thing, right? And then the other big hole to me, which you sort of addressed, is the polygraph test that the driver that gave her a ride home, the middle-aged man that had the conviction
right.
of abduction and rape in his past. And now we know that, I mean, we don't know, but Faith said that Marina would turn tricks every once in a while for some extra cash on the side. And she may have had a modeling page on that and sort of put
sure.
that word out. So, I mean, that surely, you know, makes her vulnerable to a man like that,
what?
You know, the driver. And you said, you know, it really depends on the polygraph operator, but what does that mean exactly? Like, are there any statistics about how the percentage of polygraphs that are not accurate?
I never used, I used polygraph, I think one time,
really?
One time in one of my investigations. And it's really dictated. The polygraph examiner is really kind of in charge of it. He controls it. And So, and the thing is, and I think I've said this before, it's not allowed. It's not used in court. So if you pass it, fail it, that never can be brought up in court. It's not evidence. It's an investigative tool. So a couple things. When I say to you, hey, okay, I think you're a suspect in this, would you take a polygraph for me? And some people will be like, yeah. And it's real. If you look at them and they'll go, yeah, I'll take it, right? As opposed to another way they react, like, oh, well, maybe, you know. So if they said, hey, no, I'm not going to take it, that's a little suspect, right? Because if you don't have anything to hide, then take the polygraph. But the polygraph is an intimidating thing. I had to take one to get on the police department. I hadn't done anything wrong. I mean, I was so worried about it. I remember on my polygraph telling them that I had taken freaking shampoo from hotels before. I had taken pens from work. Because, right? Like, because oh my God, it's like, have you ever stolen anything? Well, fuck. Yeah, you know? I'm like, yeah. You know? And the guy was... It's funny that you're laughing because my polygraph examiner was like, okay,
that's funny.
Have you ever stolen anything of value? And I'm like, well, you steal enough of those little shampoos in hotels. I mean, you can add up. But anyway, but you're nervous. You're nervous taking it, right?
That's funny.
And you're always going to have those people, those psychopathic people psycho people.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Like a sociopath
can pass it,
right?
And when you're looking at these people, like, and so anyways, the polygraph is a tool. It's a tool used. So if you said, hey, I'll give you a polygraph, absolutely, and I give it to you. And I had it happen in one of my cases. He took it and he failed it. He said, yeah, I'll take it. And he failed it because he thought he could beat it. And so I go back in there and I go, dude, you freaking failed it. Like, you're lying. I know you did this. You're lying. He's like, no, I didn't, you know. So he was able to, and it didn't rattle him that I sat there and said, hey, you failed this polygraph. It didn't rattle him. I knew he committed the murder. He knew he committed the murder, but he passed the polygraph, or he didn't pass and he failed the polygraph, but that didn't rattle him. Most of the time when we go in there and we say, hey, you failed the polygraph, it rattles people. It rattles them. They're like, oh, and then we get a lot of confessions or we get more information. And then you've got some people who can just pass it. They're great at what they do. They're great at lying, right? They can just sit there.
But also, some people may know already that it's not going to qualify as
most
evidence
people,
in court. And so they can just be like,
some, but
so
most
what?
People,
so what if I passed it or failed
well, yeah.
it? Screw, you know, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, I didn't use it. I used it one time and it didn't work. I used it. The guy failed it and it didn't even rattle him. He's like, well, then your polygraph machine is broken.
I read a book on the hypnotherapist that helped solve the Boston Strangler case. Mm-hmm. Hypnotherapy isn't, you know, that, you know, it cannot be used as
right.
evidence either, because if somebody wants to lie in the deepest, deepest, deepest hypnosis, they will still lie if they really don't want to be caught. And that's kind of
right.
the same
and
thread
people,
as doing a polygraph, right? If you really, really don't want to be caught, you're going to lie with conviction.
Well, absolutely. So I don't put a lot of stock in them. I used them once. I don't love them. I think people can beat them. I think people can beat them. It's great for TV. They like to show that shit.
So that's what I wonder with this driver. I mean, what other, is it just, okay, you pass the polygraph, bye. Okay, we'll cross you off the list. Like, what else has gone on there? I mean,
on the surface, that's exactly what it looks like. It's exactly kind of what it looks like on the surface. It would be great to get into a room with these investigators, you know, and that's what's so challenging with you know, being retired and going back and looking at cold cases, that the investigators aren't great about opening up everything because, you know, it's an ego thing, or I'd be like, hey, did you do this? And you know, feel stupid if they didn't, when it's really not about that. But, you know, with a fresh set of eyes, even your set of eyes and not being an investigator could land. So you could see something that, you know, when you're engrossed in it, you don't see. And I think maybe they were engrossed in it for a little bit, but they're not anymore. And that's what would be frustrating if I went down there. You know, and that's what happened in Delphi. When I went up to the Delphi case and I started interviewing people, they're like, no, no one's talked to me. No one's interviewed me. So, you know, cold cases really come down to how motivated is the investigator to talk to everybody.
Well, also, how much time can they dedicate before their boss says, move on? It's time to look at the next case.
Yeah, but when you look at Bloomfield, they probably had another murder.
Right, right.
And they're
right.
not that busy. And so that's a little bit frustrating. No, they don't have the experience of doing them every day like a major metropolitan city, but they also don't have a lot to do. And there's so much work to be done. But again, you know, if there's not pressure coming, from the family. And there absolutely, there's been pressure, but they've kind of been blown off. And that's really sad to me, because I think if you have somebody in the family that is just, you know, still working with the police department, wants to know the information, then you owe it to them as an investigator, as a police officer, to keep working it and keep them informed. And so that bums me out that they're not being at least called back and told where they're at in the investigation and that thing. So the whole point on this, you know, when we drive down there, whenever we do that, it's just to do that. I mean, it's not rocket science. Anybody could start interviewing people and getting information and then passing it along. Because like I've said a million times, I guarantee you, we go down there for a day, we are going to ask questions that have never been asked.
And talk to people that have never been interviewed.
And never been talked to. That's the key to being a good investigator. Get as many perspectives as you can and then make the puzzle.
Right. It's so much a puzzle coming together. And each interview puts a bunch of new pieces on the table where you're just like, okay, what fits, what doesn't fit?
Well, what would be great is if the investigators would be like, you know, come down, we'll show you everything we have. Let's get a brand new table together. Let's get a new puzzle together with fresh eyes.
Whoever killed her, if it isn't DJ, he's still out there. They've had 10 years. Who else have they either killed or harmed?
Oh my God. Yeah. Gives them confidence that they could do it again. And where are they going to strike again? Another small town. I mean, they're not stupid. They know those investigators are not investigating murders every day. That's what kills me about law enforcement. It's like, I would take help from anybody. You want to give me help? I haven't solved this shit. Absolutely. Come help me. We just don't play well together. And I wish that would change. And what's really sad is the body's never been recovered. And there's something to be said. There's two pieces that help, from what I've learned, help people move on. They found the body, you know, and they found out who did it, right? And so there's two huge pieces that are missing that the family and the rest of the people that knew her have to live with. There's no answers. Well, any of you guys that are listening has any information about it, you can contact me through my website, or you can call 812-332-4411. Again, 812-332-4411. Let's all come together and try to get this case solved. Again, thank you guys so much for all your reviews and rates. Please pass this podcast on to your friends and family. And we will talk to you guys later on the next episode of Murder with Menina.
If you have a cold case you'd like Chris to review, submit it through our website at murderwithmenina.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Murder with Menina and Twitter at Murder W Menina. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Murder with Menina.